Republic Broadcast Network. We're broadcasting live today from Arlington, Virginia, an important 9/11 symposium sponsored by DC 9/11 Truth.org. We're streaming worldwide on the 25-meter band under the radar with Webster Tarpley and panelists.
But we do have the ability to broadcast our conference here on Worldwide Internet Radio. That is World Crisis Radio on RBNLive.com, a very important anti-establishment radio. We're streaming Internet, RBNLive.com. We're also available in the 25-meter band shortwave. And in many parts of the United States, you can hear this on low-power local community FM that flies below the radar of Big Brother. Now, if I may, I don't want to take a lot of time from people, but I'd just like to go through the people who are here. We're joined, first of all, by, to some extent, the man of the hour, Colonel Bob Coleman, very powerful and... Please the applause to the very end, so we don't need our own clock. That was one of our problems with the Alex Jones conference. Save all of that enthusiasm for the end, because otherwise we're eating up our time. Colonel Bob Bowman is fresh from taking 44% in the 15th district of Florida.
Let me see if I can remember everybody.
We've got Kevin Barrett, who is an important fighter for academic freedom at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, fighting back against a group of desperate reactionary Republicans in the state legislature. He's been my guest on this program before.
We have then got, let's see, Dan Abramson, who's a host of, on here on. We've got Wayne Madsen of Wayne Madsen Report, whose praises I have been singing in recent weeks because of his very courageous work on the pedophile Camarilla in the House of Representatives. And there's one person who I can't see, and that is J. Michael Springman of the State Department, one of the most important whistleblowers of the entire thing. He was sitting in Saudi Arabia, and he was given orders to let all sorts of disreputable characters into the United States. So without further ado, the music has not come up yet. We're going to actually go to Bob Bowman and let him give an introductory statement.
I did not win my congressional seat in Florida's 15th district. It took 44%. There were a lot of reasons why I didn't win. Lack of money was one. Newspapers who endorsed my opponent was another. I think that the 9/11 truth movement can be extremely important in making it possible for me and for others in the future to win their elections. If the 9/11 truth movement can get itself together and shed the image of a bunch of nuts running off in different directions, calling each other names, finger-pointing, and so forth. The 9/11 truth movement must have a single message, a simple message, and one that can be defended.
Discussing 9/11.
The 5 or 6 minute statement of what's on your mind and what you think the highlights of this day's proceedings have been.
Hi, I'm Mike Springman. I was formerly chief of the visa section at the CIA's Consulate General in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. While there, I was required repeatedly by people who claimed to work for the Department of State, but who in reality worked for the Central Intelligence Agency's clandestine service, to issue visas to terrorists. These were people that were going on to the Afghan war to kill Soviets. Since then, they've been trained and created into a cadre of American jihadists, if you will, to work in Afghanistan, to work in Iraq, to work in Iran. And the people who did this, J. Philip Frers, Quackenbush, Henry Ensher, Karen Sasahara, Andy Weber, Paul Tveit, and Justice Stevens are either working for the American government or have retired on fat government pensions. Tveit is living in Fairfax County, Virginia. Frers is living in Clearwater, Florida. Quackenbush is living in Findlay, Ohio. The last I saw of Andrew Weber, he was masquerading as an arms control inspector in Russia. And Justice Stevens has dropped off the radar scope. Joseph P. O'Neill, a State Department inspector who was supposedly to catch all of this stuff, shredded the file I had kept on the terrorists I was being ordered to give visas to. I have tried 5 times to get the attention of Congress to do something about it, most recently with Nancy Pelosi, Jay Rockefeller on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and Jane Harman on the House Intelligence Committee. I've met with dead silence. And Tom Davis, the Commonwealth of Virginia, a fellow who opposes whistleblowers and speaking the truth about criminals in government, he was reelected in Fairfax County. So I am totally pessimistic on what's going to happen, and I see no way of doing anything about this unless and until we abolish the CIA's clandestine service and reduce the intelligence system's budget by at least 25% this year.
All right, cool. Hello to the listeners. This is Dan Abramson from False Flag News. Sure, some of you have heard me before. The crux of my speech, if I can break it down in about 5 minutes, I'm saying that the goal of 9/11 truth right now must be primarily to stop the war in Iran. We know that 9/11 was an inside job. That is clear from the evidence, but I think too much we're stuck on, I disagree with this point with you, and you disagree on this point. Basically, if we agree on the major details, that's what matters right now. The goal of 9/11 truth is we are one of the few political movements in this country that may prevent war with Iran. And so I discussed this drill that's going on December 4th to the 14th. It's called Vigilant Shield 07, which is being run by NORTHCOM, Northern Command. These are the officials who, in the event of another terrorist attack, are going to take over the country, suspend civilian government, create a martial law military dictatorship. These are the shadow government officials. In fact, if you look into the Washington Post, they talk about the shadow government. This is a real group of people, real generals, who during the ardent sentry drills earlier this year were setting up. They get guys in the bunker ready to take over. So how do we stop World War III? How do we stop war with Iran from escalating and bringing us to war with Russia and China? Well, one of the things we need to do is investigate the origins. So I talked about the Israeli role, which is something a lot of people don't want to talk about. And that includes the APAC spy scandal. This is very mainstream. This is Larry Franklin, who was convicted, pled guilty, and now has a 12-year prison sentence for passing classified information to and from the State of Israel through the Office of Special Plans. These were the criminals who put us into war with Iraq, who were putting out the phony justification for an invasion of Iraq with bogus intelligence designed to bypass the CIA and State Department, who were saying Saddam doesn't have weapons, and if he does, the only chance that he will use them will be in an invasion. So I want to talk about the Israeli role. I want people to investigate the dancing Mossad agents. I want them to investigate the art student spy ring. Hundreds of Israelis who were arrested in this country before 9/11 trying to penetrate intelligence sources in this country. I also talked about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. This is the counterbalance to NATO, as well as the Collective Security Treaty Organization. When we watch the forces aligning for World War III, this grouping of China, Russia, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, as well as Belarus and Armenia. These are the groups that will oppose an invasion. And so I think we need to pay closer attention to Caspian politics. And that goes for Georgia and Ukraine as well, with their phony CIA people power coups, where they install leaders like Saakashvili in Georgia, put him under the NATO coalition, and now provoke Russia. This is a direct provocation of war. I think we're also looking at an economic breakdown right now, and we need to admit this to ourselves. The plunge protection team, as I talked about, means that the dollar is on the way out. Another big part of that is studying the oil bourses. All this stuff is complicated, but we need to get a hold of it. That means looking into the Iranian, Russian, Shanghai oil bourses, as well as Venezuela, which is now trading their oil in euros, and the move for OPEC to do the same. I also think we need to look into the advanced weapons systems, the private firms, Boeing, Raytheon, SAIC, L3 Communications. So much of the drug dealing, so much of the ability to create terrorism has been privatized outside of government oversight, even off the black budgets. So the solutions I was putting out are basically 9/11 truth candidates, and I agree with Dr. Bowman. It's tough to win if you're not on a major party, but if we look at Craig Hill in Vermont, he was running radio ads, very cheap, saying 9/11 was an inside job, talking about WTC7, and during the debates on TV, which got good coverage, he went out and made 9/11 an issue. He didn't win, but he made 9/11 an issue for thousands of people who would have never heard. So don't think that if you can't win, that it's not worth it. You win by getting the message out. You win by being in the debates and by getting the cheap radio and airtime. This is pragmatism. You're not going to get it all, but you'll get a win in the end. I also think we need to see ourselves as an international struggle. 9/11 Truth is part of the same movement as the campesinos that are protesting in Mexico right now. We're the same as the farmers in China that are getting their land taken and being shoved into cities and being forced into gulags where they have to work, make the sweatshop clothing for Walmart. We are part of an international struggle. And in that sense, we must break through the late left gatekeeper Maginot line of Noam Chomsky and Amy Goodman and all of these officials who would rather hold back 9/11 Truth and put people in the same phony paradigm of fighting this corporation that may or may not exist. I think we need to start learning the names, Northcom, Stratcom. These need to roll off our tongues easily. We also need to monitor the drills. I do that on my website, falseflagnews.com. I could use some help. People, if you find out about drills, this is how they bootleg real attacks. You need to email that to me, falseflagnews.com. Get at me. The war games as well. And finally, I say we need more direct confrontation. That means in New Hampshire, go to the candidates. Get in their faces with video cameras and say, John McCain, why are you defending the 9/11 conspiracy? Hillary Clinton, why are you covering up? We need to get to them and then put it on YouTube. And that goes for the media as well. We need direct media confrontation. I think somebody like Keith Olbermann could possibly be an asset. We need to find certain members of the media. For example, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer did amazing articles on the coming of the draft, how the Selective Services being reinstated, how they're rolling out a draft for people under the age of 39 with special skills and for a military draft. That's a newspaper who obviously has a looser editorial control. We need to target places that might be sympathetic rather than just saying the media is controlled. We know that. Operation Mockingbird has proved that the CIA has infiltrated the media. It's controlled by 8 corporations, and we don't need to be told that. We need to find the few voices who may break it out. So, thank you.
This is Wayne Mastin with the Wayne Mastin Report, a fledgling website that started at the end of May of 2005 on a shoestring budget and still operating on a shoestring budget. But in the interim, I've been able to attract the attention of quite a few people in the intelligence, law enforcement community, intelligence, law enforcement community, foreign intelligence agencies, people in other government agencies that were involved with the events of 9/11. And my appeal would be to the incoming Democratic chairman on the House side and the Senate side to make available time for many, many people who are scared to death, some of whom are still in the intelligence and law enforcement community, some who left under various circumstances, but all of whom are very much afraid that if they come forward, they see what's happened to other whistleblowers, they don't want the same thing to happen to them. So my appeal is to these incoming chairmen and their staffs to provide
okay.
These individuals.
We'll be back in just a minute with World Crisis Radio at RBN Live and Arlington, Virginia at the DC 9/11 Truth.org Symposium.
So if it's Alcee Hastings or the third ranking member, Sylvester Race from the state of Texas, I would hope that they would perform an outreach to these people, former and current federal employees. Carl Levin on the Senate side, Senate Armed Services Committee, Jay Rockefeller, Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Pat Leahy, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman, and one of the people that I think we can rely on the most, the incoming Subcommittee Chairman under the Senate Judiciary Committee on Administrative and Constitutional Law, the only man who had the guts enough to vote against the Patriot Act, Senator Russ Feingold from Wisconsin. On the issue of the Mark Foley case, it seems that every decade one of these scandals emerges, mostly having to do with the Republicans. Started in the early 80s with the Korea Gate, Tungsten Park, male pages being abused, used as male prostitutes. The end of the 80s, Reagan-Bush transition. We had Craig Spence, a GOP lobbyist, bringing male prostitutes into the White House after midnight. Now, I remember Barbara Bush, what she said, the then First Lady. She said, how am I supposed to know what occurs in my house? This hideous woman is the same one, of course, who said, oh, well, these people in the Astrodome, they're really rather fortunate because they were underprivileged anyway. The Bush family has been front and center in a lot of this stuff. Then we had the recent thing with Foley, Hastert, the cover-up, Melman. It goes right to the White House. We know that a member of the White House press corps who spent 150 nights, because we know that from the Secret Service records, and I should have added to my previous list, Henry Waxman, who's going to be taking over the House Government Operations Committee, asked for those records from the Secret Service. He didn't get the full records because he was forced to do a Freedom of Information Act request because Tom Davis would not allow his committee to be used to look into this matter. But we had a member of the White House press corps, Jeff Gannon, who was a shill for the right-wingers, for the White House. 150 remain overnight in the White House. I think we need to know what that was all about. Not that, look, Jeff Gannon, you know, he can be whatever he wants to be. But unfortunately, if you're in a Republican Party, you can't. And that's why these people live these lives where they have to pretend that they're something they're not. So I see that as an important area because of the nature of these individuals. They're highly blackmailable, and that's the essence of the problem. Why did not the Congress show more backbone in oversight for the Bush administration? What did Karl Rove have on some of these members? And now we see, as a result of the Foley Gate, at least a half a dozen Republican members of the House, including the leadership, were in a blackmailable position, along with the senior members of their own staffs. And we don't know how many in the Senate, but we can probably guess. At least three that I can think of. Fortunately, the three that I suspected and I heard about, all three lost their Senate seats. Which is probably one good thing out of a host of bad things that happened. So the pedophile thing is just part of the whole culture of corruption we've seen with the Republican Party, and it's probably the most heinous. Unfortunately, one other candidate for the House who did not win was Patty Wetterling from the Minnesota 6th. Congressional district. Her son was abducted some years ago when he was 11 years old at gunpoint. It's never been seen since. Patty Wetterling was, of course, going to bring that issue on missing and exploited children, a real commitment. Not like Mark Foley said he had a commitment to this. He was actually named by the Republicans as the chairman of the caucus on missing and exploited children by the GOP. That's how sick these people are. Patty Wetterling, of course, did not win. She lost to Michelle Bachmann, who's one of these crazy homeschooler types, a member of some far-out Lutheran cult. She has some of her own kids and 30 foster kids. I really feel sorry for them.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, broadcasting live from George Mason University. DC911truth.org.
1968, and that year the Republicans gained back those 50 seats. We have just gone through a prelude election, and I think we can expect the actual watershed to come on us in 2008. I think it's a good thing to know where you stand in history, and I think this is, on the whole, reliable. And I think it's good to know that history has a dynamic that may be working for us. In other words, history is on our side for a change, provided we do the right things. Now, it should be clear that if Hillary Clinton, Joe Lieberman, Rahm Emanuel, and I suppose Harry Reid are the people determining what's going to happen, this will be aborted. And the way it can be aborted is into a form of fascism or totalitarianism. If there's going to be a positive outcome of the party realignment, it's got to be done in terms of 9/11 truth, getting out of Iraq, ending this constant incessant imperialist meddling in the internal affairs of other countries, And we're going to have to look forward to world monetary reform, world monetary recovery. We've got to do something about the death agony of the dollar and so forth. In the immediate framework, we've got to do things like stopping Robert Gates from becoming the Secretary of Defense. He is, after all, an Iran-Contra criminal. He's involved in death squads. He's involved in drug running. He's involved in gun running. He is, most interesting for us, he's the founder of Al-Qaeda. As head of the CIA or deputy director or top functionary, he created Al-Qaeda as an international brigade of extremist mujahideen to fight against the Soviets. So he is at the root of the entire 9/11 question. Another one is Bolton. Bolton has to go. It is inadmissible to take impeachment off the table. The Constitution says impeachment is on the table. And what are we supposed to do? Simply say, well, the government is chock full of criminals, September criminals, Iraq war criminals, FISA criminals, Geneva Convention criminals, Abramoff criminals, Halliburton criminals. But because of the need for civility and bipartisanship, we're simply going to live with all these criminals. This is impossible. The Augean stables have got to be cleansed. And I'm, of course, in agreement that it is now time to begin lobbying in that sense. We have to do a lobbying operation right away against Robert Gates, make him so smelly that they don't dare to vote for him. We've got to do things like go into the retail politics of New Hampshire and Iowa, one of the few places where you can actually confront an oligarch, even Stephen, right? We've got to ask all those questions for Mayor Giuliani. How come you destroyed the crime scene? How many federal crimes did you commit, Rudy? Or Senator McCain, unstable, I'm afraid. Why did you write that awful preface to that Popular Mechanics screed on 9/11? I would also recommend, when you formulate these things, a way of putting it in is the Cain-Hamilton-Zelikow Commission is a tissue of lies. How do we know that? Well, we know that in some ways through official, mainstream, accredited facts. What are they? Abel Danger. Congressman Weldon brought this forward. He wanted to hit Clinton with it. Congressman Weldon has now been destroyed, I think, in part because of what he did there, although maybe he had other problems too. There was all of that evidence about Atta being in the United States. For me, it's evidence that there were two Attas. But he brought that. The Abel Danger people went to the Cain-Hamilton Commission, and it was swept under the rug. Now, for me, of course, Abel Danger is something more. Abel Danger are the terrorist controllers. They don't just monitor terrorists. They run the patsies. That is actually what they were doing. So that's a very dangerous complex. We know from Bob Woodward that there was a meeting with Tenet, Kofor Black, and Condi that was swept under the rug. It was never reported. And we know that we have Cain and Hamilton saying that they knew that the NORAD generals were committing perjury, and they decided not to do anything about it for national unity. Or was it for the invisible government? We also have one that everybody knows, which you don't have to know anything to know, that if Picard, the acting director of the FBI, gets up and says, Ashcroft told me to shut up about Al-Qaeda, and Ashcroft is sitting in the same room saying, you're lying. Well, one of them is lying. One of them is committing perjury. And if that happens in front of your commission and you want to be taken seriously, you've got to do something. But, of course, perjury was not an issue for Cain, Hamilton, and Zelikow. I also recommend pull the thread. The thread is what, unfortunately, so many 9/11 people don't even mention. Angel is next. It happened. Condoleezza Rice says it happened. William Safire says it happened. His source is Dick Cheney. Here's a great chance to subpoena Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney, did they say Angel is next, yes or no? Quite obviously they did. And it came in with a load of top secret code words that indicated that the people who did this made the threat to Bush, do what we want or your curtains for you. This was from the top of the U.S. institutions. Now, I tried to praise Bob Bowman, not just for the 9/11 work, but if we look also at the issues that he took up, issues of economic justice, I would call this a program in the direction of a renovated and refurbished New Deal. I would add certain things, I guess, to his program, but if we had to take the choice of a libertarian approach, a green approach, or a New Deal approach, as Bob did, I think it's no coincidence that the New Deal approach is the one that builds the largest possible base of consent. And we're calling here today for a citizens candidate movement on 9/11 truth. People should come forward everywhere to run for Congress, run for Senate. We're going to have to deal with the problem of a 9/11 presidential candidate before too long and a vice presidential candidate. These issues are now on the table. I simply recommend that the program involved ought to be that kind of progressive, modern New Deal. Now, there is one other issue that Bob brought up, and maybe this can also lead to further discussion. He got 44% of the vote. If we had not had so much disarray and slandering and backbiting and unreasonable charges in 9/11 Truth, he might have won. And if he had won, the whole world would be considerably better off than it is, because one maverick, as we see from Kucinich or Ron Paul, things like this, one maverick can work wonders. However, I think we run up against this problem. I think it is imperative to have an overall political judgment. Who did it? How did it happen? I think this is simply imperative. Therefore, I have built my house on invisible government MIHOP. And I'm perfectly prepared to tell you all about the invisible government. It takes a while. It takes us back to the 1890s. We have to talk about things like Morgan. But it then begins to explain a lot of the things, the assassinations from the 60s, the Vietnam War, the Bay of Pigs, the Gulf of Tonkin, the bombing of Serbia, and so on and so on. So I think a political judgment is imperative. If you don't have the political judgment, in other words, if you don't have some answers, I guess this is my foible, that I say I do have answers. I don't have unanswered questions. I have some of those too. But mainly, I have the answers. If we don't have the answers, above all, if we don't know that this came from inside the United States, we're left with the enemy's worldview, which is that there really is Al-Qaeda, there really is Islamic Arab terrorism at the level that they say, with those capabilities and the willingness to strike in the way that we've seen. And I simply say they don't have that ability. These people that we see, Atta, Mustawi, Zarqawi, these are psychotic patsies. They come from a stable of patsies. In the case of bin Laden, there are several. There's a fat one for the winter. There's a thin one for the summer. There's a conciliatory one. There's a mean one. They bring him out. They trot him out. He does film here, there. Atta, there are two. Jara, there are two. Those guys are patsies. The other question is, of course, where is the next one coming from? This is Dan Abramson's point. Is that you got to know where the next one is coming from. And the next one is not coming from a cave. It's not coming from Hezbollah, not coming from Tehran. It's coming from your dear friends cutting across the intelligence community, the Pentagon, the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, to be sure. And then, of course, there's the question of Hillary. If you really believe that Al-Qaeda exists, then you're going to fall for somebody who says, yeah, we need a war on terror, and I can do it better. I'll attack Iran better, and I'll get your European troops and European money that Bush can't deliver. So vote for the warmonger Hillary. I think the warmonger wing of the Democratic Party right now is one of the greatest obstacles to the future of the world. So here's what I would recommend. I suggest that you divide the whole question into two parts. One is a theoretical discussion, and I think this should go on, and it should be freewheeling, and it should be open. However, the question is, how is it conducted, and where is it conducted? Is it conducted on the first time you get to go on cable TV? No. But Samuel Aronowitz of London calls shop talk. You've got to know what the limits of shop talk are. You've got to know that there is a theoretical discussion. And I think this is important. I think one of the greatest factors in tearing down the official version has been the work of Professor Stephen Jones, formerly of Brigham Young University, and his thermite hypothesis. I think that hurt the official version very, very much. And I would not want to tell Professor Jones, no, we've got to leave those questions alone. I think those are excellent questions. But there is this area of theory. Now, let's switch to the other side. What's the other side? The other side, in my view, is the world of activism. Now, on the theory side, you got to have all sorts of differences aired out. But on the activism side, that's where you have to have unity. That is where you've got to say, we've got to run candidacies. We've got to organize conferences. We've got to set up the Independent International Truth Commission, in my view. We've got to cooperate with people that you don't agree with on all sorts of things. You've got to have people that you don't think really have it quite right theoretically, but you've got to get together and cooperate in the same way that we have a united front here on this panel today. And I think that's the critical question, is the united front. I've seen this stuff work in the student movement, in the anti-war movement, in the, what can we call it, the labor movement. There are some attitudes of sectarianism that are simply a feature of the human personality. Some people are sectarians. They are incurable. Hey, other people are opportunists. They may be incurable too. You have liquidationists. You have interests. You have all of these kinds of people. The only way you get anywhere is to have a broad united front that says, we continue the theoretical debate in its proper form, in its proper seat, but we cooperate on the big stuff. And the big issue is, if you refuse to cooperate with the United Front, then you are a sectarian, and then you are no good. You are a no good Nick. And I would say the measure was, when we had that C-SPAN broadcast of 8 hours, who was willing to build the audience? If you were willing to build the audience for that, then you're a perfectly good member of the 9/11 truth movement. And you did that even though some of the speakers you didn't agree with. Of course. But if you sat back and said, oh, those are all agents, or those are no good, or I'm going to sabotage it because I am me, I think that's really the big issue. So I would recommend that we use a sphere of theory and theoretical discussion, but of course there also, you cannot be a bubbling cauldron of hate. You can't bring in, you know, you're an agent, you're no good, you're this, you're the scum of the earth, and all this. This is no good. You got to have a civil debate about theoretical issues. Then you've got to have a sphere of activism where we all need to contribute, because we've got to expand this. We've got to recruit new candidates. We've got to run for office in new places. And indeed, we're going to be in a greater dialogue with the institutions. We're going to lobby them. You can now lobby the Democratic Party in a way that you could not before. The institutions are in a phase of transformation and upheaval, and you want to go into them and do as much as you possibly can. But then I think you've also got to use this concept of the United Front to keep a relatively autonomous sphere of practical activism going from day to day, where you cooperate with all kinds of people. And I would propose that as a solution which has a certain history of maybe 100 or 150 years, if it's done right, it can be extremely effective. And in terms of Keith Olbermann, the only thing you got to do with Keith Olbermann is get rid of that guy, Gerald Posner, who's his hero. Because he said, Keith Olbermann once said, oh, I didn't believe the Kennedy assassination, sir, but then Gerald Posner showed me that it was all completely correct. Now, let me give up the microphone to whoever would like to have it. We've now got a little bit more than an hour. I guess everybody who wants to, I'm sorry I went on so long, but you know me, I'll promise to shut up. I didn't get to be in the first 30 minutes here, so I had to catch up. So let me give the microphone away. I'm sure I'll never see it again, and ask people to respond.
Were there some questions directed for me, Bob Bowman?
Well, Bob, here's a question that maybe you can, it wasn't directed to you specifically, but maybe you'd like to handle this. What was the role of Richard Clark in what happened on 9/11?
I really don't know. I think that the debt we owe to Richard Clark is from his book divulging the thought processes that went through the Bush administration both before and after 9/11. But again, I guess that part of my habit of trying not to pin things on specific people, although I made a mistake once on a two-hour radio show where I was asked if there was complicity within the U.S. government, who would you like to call to testify? Who would be your prime suspect? And like a fool, I answered the question. I said Dick Cheney. And I guess you have to recognize that that was a hypothetical question, And but still, because of his role in all of those exercises that morning, I guess that would still be the same. But I really just have gratitude for Richard Clark for what he did put in his book. I would like to say that there's been a lot of trashing of Republicans, and they're not really the enemy. The Republican and Democratic parties are artificial creations, in a sense, of the ruling elite who like the American people to think they have a real choice. And so they parcel out hot button issues like abortion and school prayer and gun control and things that the federal government really doesn't have much business being involved with in the first place, and about which the elite could care less. And they divide these up between the parties to give people the feeling that they have a real choice and that there are real differences. And you have all this bickering going on between the two parties, especially at campaign time.
Well, I would just add that along with Richard Clark, there were several members of the Bush administration who either resigned in disgust or were fired after 9/11. These are the wrong people. These were the people who questioned. These were the people who questioned what happened on 9/11. Certainly, Richard Clark. We heard him before the 9/11 Commission apologizing for what happened, but he was told right after Condoleezza Rice took over as National Security Advisor, Bin Laden was no longer the priority. Sandy Berger, in transition, said, Bin Laden is your number one problem. And the Bush administration, what do? They know no sooner had they taken over office, they started negotiating with the benefactor for Bin Laden and the Taliban government of Afghanistan, because they put natural gas and oil interests over the lives of the American people and have done so since. After Clark left, Rand Beers, his deputy, left in disgust. Paul O'Neill, the Treasury Secretary, a high-ranking member of the cabinet, was fired and then accused of stealing information on a CD. Paul O'Neill, after 9/11, went over to Dubai and the other Emirates and the stooge kingdoms on the Arabian Peninsula. They're nothing more than contrivances for the oil companies, and said, listen, I want a full accounting of money transfers to Atta and al-Shehi and these other characters that came through your banks prior to 9/11. That's why he got fired. He went to the Dubai Central Bank. He started asking a lot of questions. And you know what? The Crown Prince of Dubai and the Saudis all called the White House and complained about Mr. O'Neill, who was doing his job. He got fired for it. Anthony Zinni, I mean, this guy was the head of the Central Command. He was the envoy to the Middle East peace process. He was basically run out of town. Larry Lindsey, who was the chairman of the Council on Economic Advisors, knew about how this administration lied about how much this war in Iraq was going to cost and probably had an inkling about some of the money and where it was going. He was also fired. There's an awful lot. I mentioned some of the unnamed people in the intelligence community who could be called before these congressional committees to testify. But I'll tell you, it goes right to the top. Bring O'Neill back here, you know, let him testify, give all these people immunity. You know, they need to let the White House know. You retaliate against any of these people with IRS audits or being charged with revealing classified information as they did with O'Neill, you let the White House know. You try that, and you're going to create a constitutional crisis. And if need be, federal marshals will protect these people from any retaliation by you White House hacks. And that's what needs to be done. And if the Bush White House wants a constitutional crisis with a new Democratic Congress, I tell the Democratic Congress, to quote George W. Bush, bring it on.
We'll be right back in just a moment with World Crisis Radio and live at George Mason University in Arlington, Virginia, with the DC 9/11 Truth.org symposium, From 9/11 Truth to 9/11 Justice.
You're listening to RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN.